Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large for Sunday, April 13th, 2014. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
The University of Arkansas Theater presents As You Like It. It's April 18th through the 27th at the University Theater Fine Arts Center in Fayetteville. The Forest of Arden is full of laughs as four couples experience love, confusion, and one gender-bending disguise in this classic favorite from Shakespeare. Tickets and information available by calling 575-3946.
Ahead on this edition of Weekend Ozarks at Large, we talk to a Huntsville resident whose four-legged friend has learned to recycle. Plus, we have our weekly conversation with Becca Martin Brown from Northwest Arkansas Newspapers and more.
That's all ahead on this edition of Weekend Ozarks at Large. But first things first, a big thank you to all of you who have, during this spring fundraising week, called in or pledged online your contributions to KUAF. Hundreds of people, and it's always very humbling and gratifying to have these fundraising weeks and to know that you appreciate what you hear so much that you'll help us pay for it, because that's how we stay on the air, and we do appreciate it.
We do. Absolutely.
We most definitely cannot do this without listener support. The reason why Ozarks at Large has been on the air for nearly 25 years?
Well, nearly 25 years with me, and more than, you know, it was on a couple, 3 years before I started doing it, so.
And this is an original spot here at 9 a.m.
Well,
it's an early
story.
Tell us the story. No. Dave Edmark, who was then an editor at the Springdale News, started. It was a once every other week, 30-minute one-on-one interview. Then, in March of 1990, I took over, made it a magazine format. And it first was on Saturday mornings at 7:30. This is before Weekend Edition with Scott Simon even existed. Then we moved it to Sunday morning at 9. So it's been on Sunday morning at 9 for 23 years about.
Okay. I was a 10.
10 what?
10 years old.
Okay. All right. That's great.
Yeah. I was going to say it's over two decades. So, yeah. Well, if you appreciate hearing Ozarks at Large on Sunday mornings, as I know I do, I just want to say thank you for showing your support, because the only reason why it's been here for 22 years is because of listener support.
I don't know about you guys, but that first day of the fundraiser, I'm always a little nervous before I hear the first phone ring.
Yes.
And then they start ringing, and then they keep ringing, and then we start seeing pledges pop up from online, and it's always just really gratifying. I feel like surprising isn't the right word. I'm always just very surprised to know that people really like what we do and that they enjoy it and that they want to help support us and make sure that we are able to continue bringing them local news stories and local musicians and all sorts of things.
I love the comments, what favorite shows people have. You know, I mean, I know that I have mine, but everybody's different. And so everybody likes different things. And I enjoy reading those comments.
Yeah. And so thank you very much for your continued support of KUAF. If for some reason you still want to contribute and hadn't had a chance, you can do that at supportkuf.com as well.
We often report on the efforts of the Northwest Arkansas Council to spread the word about Northwest Arkansas being a great place to live and to conduct business. The council collaborates with business and civic leaders, local chambers of commerce, and other key stakeholders to develop and implement a strategy for improving Northwest Arkansas. Last November, the council added another collaborator to the list when they introduced their Digital Ambassadors Program. The new collaborator, the community. The program encourages individuals in the community to spread news that positively impacts Northwest Arkansas. Individuals sign up on the council's website, committing to sharing positive messages about the region via their personal social media accounts. Rob Smith is communications and policy specialist with the council. He's responsible for generating the content that is shared.
Yeah, you'll receive an email. You decide based on the content of that email. That email will tell you, hey, we've got some great new content. The Walmart amp in Rogers is, you know, preparing to be open by June. And you'll just hit a button that says share now. And if you want to share that, you don't have to share it. You certainly can. And when you hit share now, depending on whether you've added Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn, that will go out to all of your social media feeds.
Almost half of the digital messages get shared through Twitter. They don't have to share everything, but in return for what they do share, ambassadors earn points. Actions that get users points are things like recruiting new ambassadors, earning the most points at 100 per new ambassador. Bigger points also go for messages that cause others to take action, like having a message retweeted on Twitter or having someone comment on a Facebook post. Those are worth more than opening the email that users receive about once a week from the Digital Ambassadors program.
The way you win is you earn the most points. And why do you want to win? Because you get a prize. And the prize is dinner and a movie. The prize is a gift certificate. The prize is something from a restaurant. Could be really a whole host of things. You know, we try to come up with a prize that each month's worth $100 or maybe $150.
Martine Pollard is the council's March winner, earning 10,590 points, though she wasn't the top earner. The top earner was also the February winner, and the rules don't allow for the same winner 2 months in a row. As a natural advocate for the area, she says it didn't take any convincing for her to sign up to be an ambassador.
When the council launched this, it was a great way for us to be able to share our voice around why Northwest Arkansas is so great. And not only talking about it to our peers and to our counterparts, but really reach other parts of the state and other parts of the country. So essentially, it's just a lot of fun for me. It's a great thing for us to talk about, and it's a great place to be.
Though she has a full-time job and two kids, in addition to maintaining an active role in the community, Martine says being a top ambassador takes no time at all. She's competitive, but earning a prize is not her ultimate goal. The goal is bragging on Northwest Arkansas. Reaching out to the community comes naturally for Martine. It's her job. She's the executive director of communications for Mercy Health Northwest Arkansas, and she knows the power of social media.
If you want to get into the tactics and be very strategic, you do gain additional points for the postings that you make. So say on Facebook, there's a certain post. If somebody shares that or comments on it or likes it, you get certain additional points. So you could probably get pretty strategic about how you can maximize the points that you get. I frankly don't do that, but you know, the more friends you have, the more followers you have, the network of people that you can reach is pretty impressive.
If we assume that Martine's 884 Facebook friends, 705 Twitter followers, and 500 LinkedIn connections are unique, a message has the ability to connect with over 460,000 people. Of course, there is some overlap. She most likely shares a few friends with Rob Smith. But the hope is that the word gets spread outside of the region.
Certainly a lot of this content moves within the region, but all of us have friends somewhere else. And the hope is that they see a message about Northwest Arkansas, that they share a story that about Northwest Arkansas, maybe trivia or something about this region they didn't know, that their friends didn't know.
Messages that have been shared the most are related to population growth, with a March 17th message receiving 563 unique clicks and 16,631 estimated impressions. Top topics also include jobs announcements and upgrades to the quality of life here in the region. In addition to sharing the messages written by the council, users can write their own messages about things happening in the region via a white box on the Northwest Arkansas Council's Digital Ambassadors homepage. But in order to earn points, these messages must be marked with one of three hashtags. Martine says this allows a user to create a comprehensive picture of what Northwest Arkansas is really like.
If you do choose to follow the hashtag NWARK,
NWARK or Great Place NWA, they're both hashtags that allow you to use to earn points if you use them in your conversations on Twitter and Facebook, etc. Mm-hmm. So we're really talking about two things. One is the message the council sends out, which is about once a week, but many of our ambassadors then go in and use the hashtag in just their own messages and earn points that way.
New members sign up daily. The program started with 17 and currently has 415 Northwest Arkansas ambassadors, and most of them share posts. Over half are women, and the average age is about 43. In an effort to reach a younger demographic, the council last week added another avenue for sharing with Instagram. In January, 90% of Instagram's users were under the age of 35.
Instagram's a whole new way to connect, and it allows people to share photos. You know, there are millions of people who have Instagram accounts, and it's one more way to tell a story about Northwest Arkansas. So the way that'll work, they'll earn points in the same system, But if they share a photo and they use the hashtag NWARK, they earn points that way. So not every message is a group of words like the ones we've shared so far. They'll become pictures. So that's kind of a nice addition.
The Northwest Arkansas program is modeled after similar ones in El Paso, Texas, and Tampa Bay, Florida. All use the national social media management company Social Toaster for rules and formatting. To sign up for the Northwest Arkansas Digital Ambassador Program, visit nwacouncil.org. This is Ozarks at Large.
Theater Square's eighth season has been its most ambitious yet, opening with the original play, The Spiritualist. Then there were recent Pulitzer and Tony-nominated productions and an inventive take on A Christmas Carol. The last full production of the season has opened this weekend, and it's a production that wraps up a stunning season appropriately, Hamlet. Grant Goodman makes his T2 debut as the title character, and John Patrick Riley, last seen here in the cast of T2's Good People this winter, is directing. Both gentlemen came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio during the first week of rehearsals to talk about the play, a work director Sean Patrick Riley says is in a class all of its own.
I think it's the greatest play in the English language, and I also think that Hamlet is the greatest role for an actor to play. And so when Bob Ford first approached me about directing this, last summer, I guess it was, my first question was, why? Why do Hamlet? And we had a discussion about that, and he brought up all these things. It's the greatest play ever written, and I agree. And this idea of that we were going to do it with 8 or 9 actors, and my response to him was, as a director, I don't know that I'm interested in directing Hamlet at T2. What I am interested in is T2 doing Hamlet, because there's a certain aesthetic that the theater has established that is about honesty and truth. And so when we began casting, one of the great things about being an actor who works a lot, and you know, I'm based out of New York, as you know, and the second that the word gets out that you're directing Hamlet, you hear from guys that you worked with 15 years ago.
Really?
Who are like, you're directing Hamlet. I'm in. You know, can I come read for you? I saw a lot of actors for this part, as you would. Grant came into the room. He read for us. And for me, it was a done deal. He gave a fantastic read. I have a very specific way of working with actors, even in a rehearsal. I mean, rather in an audition process where I just want to sit down and have a conversation with the text. Just talk to me. Mm-hmm. And you were very amenable to that. And I knew before he left the room that he was my Hamlet. Absolutely. I was like, yeah, this is the guy. And was excited to start right away.
Did you have a good feeling?
I did. You know, the things I've been thinking just in the week that we've been working on this so far is that I'm terribly lucky to have such a symbiotic relationship with my director. Mm-hmm. And I knew that from the get-go. I knew that from the audition we had a very similar way of working, and that's proved to be true since we've begun rehearsals last week. I had a good feeling about it. I knew that we were on the same page. I could tell straight away that Sean was all about what we call original practices, which is sort of a way of performance that they think was the closest way to the way the plays were performed at the Globe in the day. And so him sitting down and interviewing me, which is a very British sort of tradition, and right. I wish that more American casting directors and directors would operate this way, which was, it was more of an interview.
Right.
And that's, you get to know the person. Well, you sit down and say,
and I believe we're
can
interviewing,
I work with that person?
Yeah, I believe we're interviewing each other, mm-hmm, as well. One of the problems, I think, is, you know, the actor is the last person hired and the first person sort of dismissed in a lot of ways. And I feel as an actor that if I'm coming into a room to audition for you, yes, I'm here because I want a job. But also, do I want to spend the next X, you know, with a play, it can be, you know, if a play runs for a year, you're going to spend a year with this person. But more specifically, do we agree on how this should be done? And I think that it's really important that the actor have that in mind, that it's getting the job is not why you walk into an audition. You walk into an audition because you have 5 minutes to do exactly what you were put on the planet to do, which is act. So come in and act. And then let me sit down with you as a director and say, hey, how is it that you work? Because so much of the actor-director relationship that often takes a lot of rehearsal time is, okay, this is how this person works. How are we going to work together? So in an audition, especially, you know, when Mr. Goodman came in, I could feel right away that we could forego that in rehearsal.
Let's talk about the soliloquy. When do you talk about it? Because arguably the most famous words originally written in the English language.
Mm-hmm.
Do you approach it any differently than you do the rest of the script?
No, I think that's the trap. I think that if you think of, oh, here comes the famous soliloquy, mm-hmm. then you're really ruined before you start. It has to be part of the through line of the play. It has to be part of the backwards and forwards of the play. I assume you're talking about to be or not to be.
I am, yes.
There's no escaping it, and I think that everyone knows in the room. I know Sean has an interesting story with the, and this is another blessing that I have, is Sean has played the role twice himself, and so that's a special gift for me to have his insight on that front. But I know that he has a funny story about coming out one night and saying to be.
Yeah, the first time I did the play, I was fortunate enough to work with the great director and teacher from the Royal Shakespeare Company, a gentleman by the name of John Barton. And he was always pushing me to drive the story forward. And he said to me one night, okay, I know you want to wallow. And I was young at the time, admittedly. He said, I know you want to wallow a bit more in to be or not to be. And I said, yeah, I think that he's really struggling with himself. When in fact, as an actor, I wanted to quote unquote perform that mm-hmm. very famous speech. And he said, all right, my dear, take the pause that you feel is in it. Because for me, it was not to be or not to be. That is the question, whether it is not. It was to be or not to be. You know, in that very
right.
Laurence Olivier clipped right. voice, to be or not to be. And he said, try it one night. And he said, see what happens. So I got out and took my spot. And I said, to be. And from the audience, or not to be. And I wound up pointing to the guy in the audience and saying, that is the question. So, yeah, in approaching that particular speech and some other, there's a lot of really famous lines in this play. It has to be about the story. Where is Hamlet? I think that more than any other play, definitely more than any other play before, and perhaps since, Hamlet represents an absolute historic moment, not just in the theater or in literature, but for human beings, which is, it's truly the first time that someone's inner life is exposed publicly. And that particular speech, it's questions that we've all contemplated. Why are we here? What is the meaning of this? Is letting go, is death easier than life? And I believe that the conclusion of it is perhaps to live in difficult circumstance, facing insurmountable tasks, is harder. And that's the choice I'm going to make. I'm going to take the hard road. I believe that's what Hamlet is saying.
You know, Harold Bloom, who's a great Shakespearean critic, talks about this play as being a very experimental play.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost Brechtian in a way. And I, as I was preparing to play it, memorizing lines, et cetera, I realized that his very first line is an aside to the audience. So from the get-go, he sort of forms this bond with the audience that he will then continue to keep throughout the play. And I think that the opening of his soul to an audience, directly to an audience in this case, is what makes Hamlet Hamlet. I think we do a very poor job in the United States about training an audience, and I don't mean by being didactic and teaching them, but in original practices, it's very clear that the audience is part of the play from the very beginning, from the second they enter the theater, that they're in the same room as the actors. We're so steeped in America in fourth wall tradition. So I think that our Shakespeare in America sometimes suffers because of that. So we put up that fourth wall and we do, like Sean says, sort of wallow in these monologues as if they are to ourselves, as if they're private moments, and they're not. They're shared moments, and they are a soliciting. And I think that when an I was doing a production of the Scottish play. We're not in a theater. I was doing a production of
Macbeth.
I was doing a production of Macbeth, and I was playing Macbeth, and I came out of the theater after the performance, and this lady stopped me on the street and said, she goes, I loved the show. She said, it felt like you were looking right at me. And I said, well, it's because I was looking right at you, you know?
You were there.
You were there. And I think that sometimes that frightens an audience. Sometimes an audience doesn't know how to take that. But then I think they start leaning forward in their seats and they start to become a part of it. And I think that's what good theater should be.
Excerpts from a conversation with Grant Goodman and Sean Patrick Riley, the lead and director, respectively, for Theater Squared's production of Hamlet. You can find out more about Hamlet and Theater Squared at theater2.org. That's the number two, theater2.org.
On the next Fresh Air Weekend, Edie Falco talks about acting, getting breast cancer treatment while playing Carmela on The Sopranos, and staying sober, which is something her character on Nurse Jackie had trouble doing at the end of last season. The new season starts Sunday on Showtime. Also, we talk with the husband-wife songwriting team that wrote the songs for Frozen. Join us.
Fresh Air Weekend, this evening at 6, here on KUAF.
Most Saturday mornings, rural Huntsville resident Arandu Sunku can be seen at the Madison County Recycling Center sorting plastics, cardboard, and cans, faithfully doing his civic environmental duty. But what makes this recycler special is that Arandu is a dog. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
Today is the last day of Madison County's bulky waste roundup, and the county recycling center is jammed with trucks and trailers. Weekend recyclers are also here dropping off detergent jugs, milk bottles, and aluminum cans at the sorting station, including Susanna Donnelly and her companion, Arandu Sunku, a big and very busy black lab.
Are you socializing? That's tin. Let's take it to tin. Don't eat it. Come pick it up, please. I dropped my keys. Good boy. Good boy. That's my boy.
One by one, she pulls containers and chipboard from her satchel and hands them to him, which he dutifully carries, sometimes a bit circuitously, to the correct bin.
Arandu, cereal.
Oh, where are the cereals?
Good job. Arandu's been recycling for more than 3 years now. Susanna Donnelly, a beautiful white-haired woman, is originally from Buenos Aires, Argentina, and came to the United States in 1968 when she was 15 years old with her father, Rodolfo Martinez. At the time, he served as an Organization of American States Secretary of the Department of Education, Science, and Culture. He eventually returned home, but Donnelly married and settled in the Washington, D.C. area, raising two daughters, one who serves as a U.S. diplomat in Cyprus, another who works for the International Monetary Fund. Susanna, she moved to Orlando, Florida, where she ended up adopting a pup, one of 12 strays, a mix of black lab and Dalmatian.
So Arandu picked me. He came, and when he was ready to be weaned from the mother, I went to see all the puppies, and we were putting them out, and He just barked himself between my legs, and that was the end of that.
She named the pup, laying at her feet, Arandu Sonku, which is Incan for intelligent heart in the Quechua language. He's a lumbering, shiny, black-coated, handsome guy with a white-tipped tail and white spots across his chest. And as he grew older, he exhibited an uncanny talent for fetching.
I hang his collar on the knob of the house and the door to go to the outside. And I just said one day, go get your collar. And the dog went and got his collar. And I'm wide-eyed in awe.
Soon, Arandu was grooming the neighborhood during their daily walks in Florida, but then he started spontaneously recycling at the house.
After Christmas, where I had a lot of cardboard boxes, and I just told him to pick up a box and bring it over and go and get another one from the car and bring it over. And I'm not guiding him. I just tell him to go get it, and I'm out of sight. And he started doing it.
Susanna purchased her dream Ozarks Farmette, she calls it, 6 years ago south of Huntsville, where she keeps several horses. She's since adopted a border collie, but Arandu is the main farmhand, or farm paw. He brings in firewood, helps to clear pasture, fetches the horse's dishes, and can even lead the mare on walks. He also gathers laundry at the house for washing. Labrador, Susanna says, means worker in Spanish, after all. She trains both her pups using repetition and cheese.
The dogs are bilingual or trilingual. They understand hand commands, English and Spanish.
Standing at the recycling bay, volunteer Mark McGee says Arandu is brilliant.
The boards here are colored for cardboard and newspaper. Blue is for newspaper, and I think he resembles the color and knows exactly where to go. And I think he can pick up on just the plastic, and he's done it. It's just like a little maneuver for him, you know, and it's just it's amazing to watch him in action.
When they're done, Arandu walks to the office to pay the cashier the weekly trash fee.
I give it to him, and he'll put his paws onto the counter and pay.
With a slobbery paper bill, but Amy Smith, the cashier, loves it.
He's just a fun little guy. It keeps it happy and wonderful around here.
Madison County Solid Waste and Recycling Center, in operation since 1989, is one of the most ambitious in the state, and it's kept 41 million pounds of waste out of regional landfills. Director Larry Kerrigan Winter.
What's unique about the facility is that we take everything, everything. It's a one-stop drop. We buy metals, we buy cans, we take Freon, we take appliances, we take all the household recycling, we take all the household hazardous waste, we take construction debris, we take tires.
So far, Arandu has yet to recycle a tire at the center, but he has cleaned up small waste tires on the farm. Center operator Alex Cruikshank says that Arandu is a model citizen.
You know, he's not only a friend and companion, but, you know, he tries to help us out in keeping our planet beautiful.
But the one thing Arandu apparently cannot do on command is bark.
Speak, Arandu. Speak. Arandu, speak. 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 Speak.
Quiet. And handy. What more could you ask for in a dog? For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To see a video of Arandu recycling a giant piece of cardboard, visit ozarksatlarge.com.
Isn't that wonderful? I would love to have this on my front door. It's my doorbell.
Once a month, we pursue the story behind a name we're familiar with in this region. This month's installment of What's in a Name begins in Fort Smith's Bell Grove District with Kate Morris, the president of the Bonneville House Association Board.
It's dear to my heart because I had my rehearsal dinner here, and when my children were baptized, we had their lunch here after the baptism for family and friends, and I've come to many weddings and parties, and so it there's a lot of memories.
The Bonneville House is a few blocks from Garrison Avenue in downtown Fort Smith. Built in the middle of the 19th century, It's been a residence. It's been in disrepair. It's been the social center for women who play bridge, and now a nonprofit venue for gatherings. Over the decades, the interior has been adapted. The furniture, mirrors, and accoutrements date from different eras, all donated to help tell a story of Fort Smith through time. The lighting in the spacious drawing room, for example, doesn't hail from the 1860s. They're crystal chandeliers in the shape of palm tree leaves.
Oh, I love the chandeliers.
Yeah, now the chandeliers are obviously, they're very Art Deco 20s, but everyone loves them so much, so we don't dare take them down and be period correct because they're so fabulous. And of course, if they ever bring them down, there's probably a list, with me included, who would buy them in a second.
The house shares its name with one of the more remarkable historic figures associated with Fort Smith.
His name was Benjamin Lewis Eulalie, Eulalie, small D-E, and then Bonneville.
Joe Wasson is with the Fort Smith Historical Association, and he knows quite a bit about General Bonneville. General Bonneville was born in France. His father, Nicholas Bonneville, ended up on the wrong side of the political spectrum from Napoleon and was jailed. It was Thomas Paine, yes, that Thomas Paine, who wrote Common Sense, who brought Bonneville, his brother, and his mother to the United States in 1803.
Ben Bonneville was sent to the sent to West Point. Graduated 2 years later, so that would be 1815, made a second lieutenant in the army, and that was in New England. Then he was sent to Mississippi, and then he was sent to Fort Smith. And according to what I've been able to figure out, he came to Fort Smith in 1822 in General Arbuckle's 7th Infantry Division, along with John Rogers, who became the founder of the city of Fort Smith.
Bonneville established himself as quite a military man, but he is best perhaps known for the expedition of 1832, when he left Missouri with over 100 men and went west. It was a field trip financed by John Jacob Astor, and it resulted in the blazing of the Oregon Trail.
And he went out there and built a little fort that they named Fort Bonneville and tried real hard to make friends with all the Native Americans that were involved with the fur trade out there, and tried to make friendly with the British and the French and the Russians. But everybody out there realized why he was really there, which was to scout out the area for American fur trade, for the American fur trade. And they really didn't meet with any success. By the time he came back in 1833, he had been declared dead because he was only supposed to be gone for 2 years.
He wasn't dead, of course, and in fact sold his story to Washington Irving, yes, that Washington Irving, for $1,000. Eventually, he retired in Fort Smith. But here's the kicker. The house we call the Bonneville House, he never lived in.
No, he didn't. He retired to Fort Smith in 1869, and he built what was at the time a grand wooden house on his acreage. And that was the original Bonneville House. And he lived there happily ever after until he died in 1878.
And it was his young widow who then actually moved in.
And that's something that I've been working on. His wife was 50 years younger than him.
Not an entirely unusual arrangement for the time. An older, rich man has a younger woman marry him, and she helps him through the last years of his life.
He died in 1878, and she apparently lived there until, at the wooden Bonneville House, she apparently lived there until 1881, I believe it was, when she bought a nice brick two-story house. They would have considered it a mansion in those days, here on 7th Street in Fort Smith.
And that's the house, still on 7th Street, that is now known as the Bonneville House. You can learn much more about its history at the website bonnevillehouse.com. This is Ozarks at Large.
My lover's got humor. She's a giggle at a funeral. Knows everybody's disapproval. I should have worshipped her sooner. If the heavens ever did speak, she's the last true mouthpiece. Every Sunday's getting more bleak.
Some of my favorite songs in the past year have come from EPs. What I like about these shorter musical recordings is because they are only 4 or 5 songs long, I feel like artists put their best effort into the project and record songs that represent their best work. While a full studio album easily offers you twice as many songs, the extra music doesn't always come with quality. On some albums, you can tell certain tracks were just thrown together because the label needed 3 more songs to complete the project. What you're listening to right now is Take Me to Church from Hozier's 2013 EP of the same name. The Irish singer released his From Eden EP last month. Andrew Hozier Byrne was born on St. Patrick's Day in County Wicklow, Ireland. According to his Facebook page, the musician was raised on rhythm and blues, soul, jazz, and the, quote, deep dark stuff stretching from Chicago to the Delta, end quote. He joined his first band at the age of 15, taught himself to play guitar and piano, and studied music at Trinity College. While there, he was a member of the Trinity Orchestra. After deciding he wanted to write, record, and perform his own music, he dropped out of school to focus on that full time. The title track off his latest EP showcases his smooth, soulful vocal talent. His easy-to-listen-to voice slides gracefully along an impressive range of notes. The melody is a comfortably bouncy one that's so catchy you can't help but sway along.
Don't you agree?
Hozier traveled to the States and performed at South by Southwest in Texas in March, and the artist apparently has no fear performing in unique venues. His Twitter page displays a photo of him recording Take Me to Church with KXT Radio on a pedestrian bridge in Austin. His latest EP contains a live version of the song To Be Alone, which was recorded last year during a show at the Pepper Canister Church in Dublin.
Never feel too good in crowds with folks around when they're playing the anthems of rape culture loud, crude and proud, creatures being all I've ever done is hide.
This song has simple instrumentation and really allows Hozier's voice to shine. To Be Alone is a bit more bluesy than the title track, and it's a little darker. But perhaps the most haunting song on the EP is one titled Arsonist's Lullaby.
When I was a child, I heard voices. Some would sing and some would scream. You soon find you have few choices. I learned the voices died with me.
Hozier's Facebook page asks the question, what are the 21st century blues and who shall we find to sing them? I think the answer can be found in Hozier's From Eden EP. The young Irish singer has brought his own style to the classic tradition of the blues, and he's brought that mix into the 21st century with him. Hozier's latest project is available now on iTunes. You can find out more about this artist at Hozier, that's Hozier.com.
Boys working on empty. Is that the kind of way to face the burning heat? I just think about my baby. I'm so full of love I could barely eat. There's nothing sweeter than my baby. I'd never want once from the cherry tree. 'Cause my baby, sweet as can be, she'd give me two flakes just from kissing me. When my time comes around, lay me gently in the cold dark earth. No grave can hold my body down. I'll crawl home to her.
Later today on This American Life. Blairsville, Georgia is like a lot of small towns. Everybody knows everybody else. There's always tons of gossip. But something changed when everybody started posting gossip online. People believed it.
And so I lost my job. And then people I knew would just walk on past me. I would say hi. They wouldn't even acknowledge the fact that I was even standing there.
Later today.
This American Life, coming up in about 20 minutes here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. Time for our Sunday montage. And for inspiration for this weekend's montage, we had to look no further than the NCAA basketball tournaments. Both the men and women championship teams come from the University of Connecticut. So here, 10 clips inspired by, about, somehow related to the state of Connecticut.
I know a spot peaceful and fair. I'd be so happy if I were there. No matter where I chance to be, Connecticut is the place for me.
Miss every lake, miss every hill. Even in dreams I think of them still. And when you see them you'll agree, Connecticut is the place to be.
What are these?
Papers.
Blank papers?
Yes, sir.
Is that a good idea?
Just cut down on your workload. You sign them now, lady, you don't have to bother.
But should I have really signed blank papers?
I can't answer that, sir. You're the one that signed them. I didn't.
Learn to throw your voice. Fool your friends. Fun and party.
No, we just want to get some people out of our house.
Ah, I understand. I understand. Well, look, in order to do that, I'm really going to have to get to know you guys. You know, we got to get closer. Move in with you for a while. Get to be real pals. You know what I'm saying?
I bring exciting news from King Arthur's court. A stranger has come to join our round table. A troubadour from a far-off land called Hollywood. A troublesome but pleasant father they call Sir Bing of Crosby.
Dan, there's an old saying. Behind every successful man, there's a woman. A loving, giving, caring woman. But you wouldn't know about that, Dan, because there's no old saying about what's behind a miserable failure.
Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night.
Hello.
Good morning. Merry Christmas. I hope I'm in time to see you flip the flapjacks.
I'm not in a flipping mood this morning, Mr. Yardley. Nora will attend to breakfast. Nora, Mr. Yardley wants to watch you flap. I mean, flip the flapjacks. I don't flip them. I scoop them.
Won't you flip just one for me, please?
I never flipped in my life, and I'm not going to start flipping now for nobody.
America took this great bestseller to its heart because it can be the story of any American. Your husband or wife, your mother or father, your boss, even yourself. Here is the story of a man's hidden lives, of intimate secrets he feared to share with anyone, of the two women whom he loved, his wife, whom he couldn't get out of his heart, and Maria, whom he couldn't get out of his mind. Here are all the once-in-a-lifetime dramas that crowd the fascinating life of the man in the gray flannel suit.
we've only just begun to live. White leaves and promises, a kiss for luck and we're on our...
If you'd like to see a list of the 10 clips and how they're related to Connecticut, you can go online to OzarksAtLarge.com.
Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large for Sunday, April 13th, 2014. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us now is Becca Martin Brown. She is Features Editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
The fact that we're all here means you survived the fundraiser.
We're here.
And it went well.
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
Good. So we had a little history on Friday talking about Pettigrew and the Shiloh Museum.
More history today?
More history today. Here's
like
another
it.
Shiloh Museum exhibit that you need to go see. It's so cool. There's a guy named Orville Hall Jr.
Okay.
He's from Fayetteville. And he was an only child in the 30s and 40s. He got lots of toys. And his mom put them away and saved them. And so there's an exhibit at the Shiloh Museum called A Boy's Toys that has all this stuff in pristine condition.
How fun.
Mm-hmm.
Toys that his grandfather and his mother made for him when he was a baby. The metal cars that kids used to play with, an Erector set, and his beloved Hawthorne bicycle in pristine condition. It was 1946, and bicycles were in limited supply because all the metal had been used for World War II.
Oh.
He saved his money, which he earned at 25 cents a pop mowing yards, until he had $27.
Oh, wow.
And put his name on the waiting list at the Montgomery Ward, which was at the corner of Center Street and College.
Oh, I didn't know we had one.
And then he drove the salesman crazy. He doesn't think his name really came to the top of the waiting list. He thinks the salesman just got tired.
Well, who can turn down a cute boy?
With money.
He worked really hard for those $27.
And so he got his bike, and he says he, quote, rode it pretty hard.
But it's still in good shape.
It's still in perfect shape. It still had the original inner tubes in it.
Oh, wow.
He went and bought a new set so that they could air up the tires so it could be on exhibit with this full-size poster of him with the bike as a little boy. It is absolutely wonderful. So is the Erector set, which still had all its tiny little parts. They built something with it to show off.
I was not that organized of a child.
I know, me either.
Very organized little boy.
Very meticulous.
And mom was very organized to keep it. And then, of course, they also have the dummy grenade that he played with. Because his dad was serving, he taught infantry tactics at Fort Sill and Fort Benning. And along the way, Orville got tanks and army men and a toy rifle that looks a lot like a real rifle and a dummy grenade that was used to train soldiers at Fort Sill. And so they asked him whether he played with it, and he said, oh, yeah, how could you be a World War II hero without a grenade? There you go.
Okay.
It's on exhibit through May 2nd. Also this afternoon, there's a show at the Walton Art Center called Fluff.
Huh. Is it a kid's show?
It's a kid's show. It's an Australian theater piece about a family that worries about discarded toys and travels the world to find them.
Aw, that's sweet.
Which sounds a lot like something I do. 2 o'clock Sunday, tickets are $6. Alan Chow's in concert at 3 o'clock.
At JBU.
Yes, and if you don't know Alan Chow, you haven't been around here long enough. He was a piano professor at the University of Arkansas, has gone on to great things, and he will be performing at the cost of $10 at the Berry Performing Arts Center. And now I'm quoting Kevin Kinder, our music editor. Blue October, a Texas-based modern rock band that has released several modern rock radio hits such as Hate Me and Into the Ocean, will be in Fayetteville for a show tonight at 9 o'clock at George's Majestic Lounge.
I think I saw them the last time they were here.
Did you like them?
Yeah, I did at the time. I was really into that at the time. I've moved a little away from that right now.
Yeah, okay, whatever she said. Let me see. They're also playing with the Architects, and tickets are $25 at georgesmajesticlounge.com.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Barbershop is a uniquely American type of music that started, as one might guess, in barbershops. Last Friday, April 11th, was Barbershop Harmony Day. And members of the River Blenders Barbershop Chorus, based in Fort Smith, came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio to sing a few songs. This is one of them, sung by the quartet Arrival, comprised of Jim Chain, Scott Monroe, Bill Terrell and Ron Bergenstock.
This is a really pretty and kind of jazzy love song called Nevertheless.
Do 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 do. Maybe I'm right, and maybe I'm wrong, and maybe I'm weak, and maybe I'm strong, but nevertheless I'm in love with you, in love with only you. Maybe I'll win, and maybe I'll lose, and maybe I'm in for crying the blues, but nevertheless I'm in love with you, in love with you. Somehow I know at a glance the terrible chances I'm taking.
I'll be taking
fine at the start, but left with a heart that is
left with a heart.
Is breaking. Maybe I'll live a life of regret, and maybe I'll give much more than I'll get, but nevertheless I'm in love with you, in love with you. Somehow I know at a glance the terrible chances I'm taking. I'm in love. I've always been so in love. Nevertheless, I'm in love with you. I'm so in love with you.
That was the Barbershop Quartet Arrival, made up of Jim Chain, Scott Monroe, Bill Terrell, and Ron Bergenstock. The four are also members of the River Blenders Barbershop Quartet in Fort Smith. The River Blenders rehearse each Tuesday night at 7 at the Butterfield Retirement Center on Phoenix Street. The public is invited to watch, and men are welcome to join in and sing.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Atkins.
Former home of the pickle.
That's right. Thanks, everyone, for your support during this spring fundraiser week at KUAF. Many people came in and answered phones for us. Mm-hmm. Many restaurants provided food for them. And many, many of you called in or pledged online with your contributions of support to keep KUAF and Ozarks at Large and public radio part of your life. And we do thank you very much for that.
Definitely. We cannot provide programming like Weekend Ozarks at Large or This American Life or On the Media or TED Talks without listeners' support. So thank you so much for making your contribution. It really does mean a lot to us.
It is a unique model, but it is a model that works for us, and we think it works for our listeners as well. The reason we are able to continue having this model is because we are listener supported. So again, thank you so much to all of our contributing listeners.
Thank you indeed. By the way, John Brown University welcomes internationally acclaimed pianist Alan Chow to the Barry Performing Arts Center in Solemn Springs this afternoon at 3. Area music lovers will be able to appreciate Mr. Chow's poetic and virtuosic style in this acoustically engineered performance hall. Tickets available at jbu.edu/tickets or 524-7382.
Weekend Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.